Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, we are like 2 weeks away from opening day. Have you been watching the WBC?
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of it, not all of it, but yeah, I've been watching the games. Last night's Dominican Venezuela game was awesome. Just the electricity in that environment there is crazy. So fun. And then yeah, it was also, for us being a reliever podcast, fun to see both teams, but specifically the Dominicans, just bullpen, those guys all coming out throwing, you know, 98 plus. It's a fun team to watch. But yeah, I mean, obviously the Italians have been making some noise. That's a cool story. That is like a good team. That's a pretty good roster, though. I mean, it's like, especially they're going to be good in four years from now. Like, that's like, Vinny Pascantino is probably the oldest position player on that roster, or John Birdie, I guess. But, you know, Nola's up there too. But other than that, that's a pretty fun, you know, Italian group. But yeah, that's been probably one of the funner storylines, just seeing how they've been playing. But yeah, it's always great, especially when they have these day games and I'm, you know, working in, from home, I can just put on whatever game's on during the day and watch it.
Yeah, it's been pretty exciting. I can't believe US almost got eliminated. There was a small opportunity there for Mexico to win and for Italy to not score a lot of runs. I thought maybe there'd be a little bit of teamwork on their parts to try to knock US out. But man, Mark DeRosa is not doing himself any favors. No, looking really foolish up there. And every single time he opens his mouth, he looks even worse.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, anyone who knows or follows Mark DeRosa, that shouldn't be too much of a surprise. I mean,
yeah,
he's not the worst guy in MLB Network, and not by a long stretch, but like,
no, yeah, I think Bubba tweeted something like
Harold
Mark
Reynolds
DeRosa shot. showing what happens when you hang out with Harold Reynolds too much.
Between Vasgersian and Harold Reynolds, like they do a show in the off season and like in the mornings, and it's just like it's painful. It's really painful, and I wish there was some good content, good content there, like for those 4 hours or 2 hours in the morning. But yeah, DeRosa, I mean, they got lucky. Hopefully that team locks in. It's so weird with the pitching, how the pitching lines up, and like now, like, they added Tim Hill today. It's like Tim Hill's on, like we're saying Tim Hill is one of the best to represent the United States. I understand how it is, but like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's weird that like Ryan Yarbrough's going out there and Tim Hill. And
well, yeah, because Tarek Skubal thought that it was going to be like an all-star game type vibe, and now he's off the team, and that's bad press for him too, especially right before free agency. I don't think it depresses his future free agent earnings at all, but definitely interesting to see him throw himself under the bus so often when he talks too.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something weird with that whole team, and I'm hoping they don't. I mean, I really don't care too much for the U.S. to win, but like, they shouldn't be taking Canada like, you know, lightly tomorrow. It's not a bad squad.
No, it really seems like they have like too much. No, I don't want to say too much talent, but they're so talented that it's like they think they are just guaranteed to win no matter what. And yeah, in most cases, but I would say in other sports, that would be more the case, like in basketball, where you see like those crazy USA teams going to the Olympics and
that's
destroying the competition. It's like in baseball, anything can happen. So.
Especially when their starting pitching is what their starting pitching is. It's like, you, unless Skeens is out there or Skubal, who's gone. It's not that those guys are hittable. Those guys are beatable. So
it really feels like, like the Dominican Republic's going to win right now. Just the energy that they have. I haven't been watching anything live. I've been watching all the recaps and I'm still catching up a little bit.
That lineup I think that lineup's better than the US. Yeah.
That's the best lineup I've ever seen in my life. You got like Julio batting seventh. It's ridiculous. So if they could just find enough pitchers, they'll get through there. But it sounds like the bullpen's good. And I've never seen like players play with so much energy as they do for the DR. So that's going to be really exciting to see who makes it to the semifinals and ultimately who wins.
That's going to be, and unfortunately, I'm going to be on a train coming home from New York on Sunday night when that semifinal between the U.S. and Dominican, if they both win, if the Dominican beats, if they beat Korea and the U.S. beats Canada, that's Sunday night at 7, and seems I'm going to be on a train coming home, and I'm so upset about that. But yeah, I'll be trying to watch with the poor Wi-Fi on the Amtrak as I come home from New York. But yeah, that game is going to be, yeah, really fun.
All right. Yeah. Here's hoping to a good game, win. Good rest of the WBC moving forward. But let's get into talking about some relievers. We are 3 weeks away from opening day. I think like exactly where today we're going to do a preview of all the bullpens in the American League. Next week, we'll do the National League preview. And then after that, I'm pretty sure we're just recording straight up on opening day. It's always on a Thursday. It's always like every single team starts at the same time or whatever, or at least starts on the same day. So it's going to be pretty exciting, but that means we only have two more off-season podcasts left. And that also means one more after this one. That also means we are wrapping up the last free agent relievers and finding homes for them. We've been talking about them all season. There are a couple Southpaws that found new homes over the past week. One of them is more notable than the other, so we'll start with him. The Red Sox signed Danny Coulomb to a one-year contract. It was surprising that he didn't get much interest because he's been so good over the past 4 years. Since 2022, he's got a 2.38 ERA across 136 innings. He is entering his age 36 season. Do you think Danny Coulomb finds a spot in this Red Sox bullpen? And how quickly do you think he puts himself in the position to get some holds for the club?
Probably. I mean, this is the best bullpen scenario for a guy like Coulomb. I think probably age and his injury history are why he didn't get a deal right away. But that Red Sox bullpen behind, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit before, but, and we'll talk about it today, but it's top heavy with Chapman, Whitlock, and then even Slayton's the next guy up, Weiser, Zach Kelly, and then it just really falls off a cliff. I would imagine maybe Coulomb takes Giovanni Moran's spot, or maybe they take both lefties. Because they have openings at the back end of that front end of that bullpen. Coulomb, especially being left-handed, is a nice Justin Wilson replacement essentially for them. I mean, the best lefty, probably the second best reliever left on the board as of today. So good signing for the Red Sox. He just stays healthy and they'll give them good left-handed innings.
All right, that's Danny Coulomb. And then the other Southpaw that signed with a club this past week was Jalen Beeks. He signed with the Texas Rangers. They've got a very veteran-laden roster right now. So Beeks fits the mold, I think, there. He is entering his age 32 season. And last year, he was pretty decent for a Diamondbacks team that really just needed available arms. And Beeks was there making 61 appearances with a 3.77 ERA. So he'll factor into the Rangers bullpen. Right now, the only lefty they have outside of Robert Garcia projected for the bullpen is Tyler Alexander. So I do see an opportunity for Beeks to make the opening day roster for the Rangers.
Yeah, and they already have, I mean, there's a couple projected minor league guys on the roster right now who I don't know if they'll make it. I mean, Josh Spores has not looked great this spring, unfortunately. And who knows about Ryan Brazier. So, Beeks probably has a good chance, especially you sign this late. You're probably going to get a chance as long as you're healthy going into the regular season. So, yeah, I'd imagine Beeks. And I think it's a major league deal for him, too. So, Beeks will probably be on that roster. And that might be a little bit of a good news for, you know, Robert Garcia being the closer, that they want to go and get a second lefty in that bullpen. Right. So Garcia could take the ninth. That's reading the tea leaves a little bit there.
No, that is a great point. Usually you have some uncertainty or some hesitancy when it comes to a southpaw closer if there's nobody there to support him from the left side. So you'll managers will want to use that lefty in situations outside of the ninth. But if the Rangers have other weapons from the left side, like Tyler Alexander and Jalen Beeks, then Robert Garcia may be safely locked into the closer role for the Rangers. Now let's talk about some news and injuries from the past week. We'll stay in the AL West and talk about the Angels, where manager Kurt Suzuki talked about Kirby Yates. Suzuki said, "I'm a big fan. Obviously, he's from Hawaii, and we brought that up. Kirby Yates is from Hawaii. That's a funny thing to mention too. Just some loyalty to like, oh, well, he's born in Hawaii. I might get him some saves. He could go ahead.
I know that's the thing. It's like, is that something that we should, I don't know, but it's a weird, but it could factor into the situation here.
Sure. Suzuki continued saying, but just watching Kirby pitch in big situations, he was one of the best closers in the game for a long time. Last year, he dealt with injuries and mechanical issues, but he's in a good place right now, mentally and physically. Sounds like nobody has really separated themselves just yet in the Angels bullpen. And Suzuki said Monday that while he'd prefer to have a set closer, he's open to having several options. And Kirby Yates has the most experience in the ninth inning for the Angels, but he'll still have to earn that role after the down year. Yates said, "You always pitch yourself into a role in the bullpen. And obviously, I want to be in the back end. I'm most comfortable pitching the ninth, but I've got to go out there and pitch well." So it sounds like everything's working in Yates' favor. It's just about him staying healthy and him getting back on track, which you're not guaranteed that given Yates's age and injury history, but the ceiling is off the charts given what he did for the Rangers a couple years ago and what he's done for the Padres in years past. And the state of the Angels bullpen allows for Yates to get into that role and sort of hold on to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, he talks about how he's in a good place now mentally and physically. And he hasn't pitched a ton. I mean, he's thrown once in March. He's only thrown one time in March, I think. So, and in February, his stuff was down even from last year. That being said, I mean, he's thrown once. That's one more time than Robert Stevenson's been on the mound in a spring training game. You know, Romano's been okay, but he's not showing, you know, 2021, 22, Jordan Romano. And, you know, I don't, this bullpen's just really, if Yates wasn't going so high, I think that's how I want to put it. Cause he's kind of creeping up right now into the early 300s, maybe even before 300s in rounds. Like I might take a chance at the end of the 300 range, 400 range, but, I don't see the return to him. You know, Suzuki talks about him being one of the best closers for a long time, but that was a long time ago.
It was only for like one or two seasons too.
In like 2019. And I know he had the year in Texas, but we've talked about that year and it's a little fluky and he got lucky there a little bit, but it's still good. I mean, he could still be a good closer, but there's a lot of risk here. And, especially with his age and, this bullpen's probably going to be a headache for a while unless Robert Stevenson just improve, gets healthy and, you know, shuts us all up, I guess. But I don't think Yates is going to be, if he does start the year in the role, it's going to be rocky, I bet.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about the Rays bullpen, and it's clear now that Edwin Uceta is not expected to be ready for opening day. The 28-year-old doesn't appear to be facing a long-term absence. However, Uceta has been playing catch without issue. It's not clear if he'll make it into an exhibition game before spring training's over. He shouldn't need a lot of time to build up given he's a reliever, but he'll still need to prove that he's ready for in-game situations before the Rays deploy him. So I think that gives us, that enhances our already strong confidence in both Griffin Jacks and Garrett Clevenger for the late innings in Tampa Bay.
Yeah. I mean, and it's even for Uceta, it's if I was kind of forgetting about him in deeper leagues, but you might maybe in the later rounds, if he does come back by the end of April, There's definitely value potentially there. I still don't see him factoring into the closer role. But yeah, and again, also, like, it's good he's playing catch, but these, you know, shoulder injuries, you never know which way they're going to turn. It could get worse, it could get better. But yeah, it's, I mean, I think from everything we knew before this week, that's probably, you know, better news than the worst case scenario. And the fact that he's throwing and they think he'll be ready at some point in the near future. But just, yeah, opening day was probably never going to happen for USADA. But yeah, I don't, you know, Griffin Jack's value should continue to just be skyrocketing at this point.
All right. I love that. Somebody else's value who's skyrocketing is Brian Abreu. And that's because the interim closer, Josh Hader, is set to begin the season on the injured list, according to manager Joe Espada. The Astros were encouraged by the bullpen session that Hader had this week, but a timeline for his buildup will carry past opening day. Hader is dealing with a new injury, different from the one that ended his 2025 season prematurely. We hyped up Brian Abreu a lot last week, and I think we're a little bit vindicated in doing so. While this doesn't guarantee that, like, Hader's out for the season or whatever, I think we were both of the same opinion that Hader's going to have this bullpen and, you know, he's just not going to be ready for opening day. I thought it might be more severe, like he might have to undergo surgery or something. But regardless, Abreu's going to open the season as the closer, which sort of locks you into a few saves. That doesn't mean, though, that I think Abreu could pitch himself above Hader. So, like, even when Hader returns, I think he's automatically locked into the closer role. It's now just like, if you're a Brian Abreu rosterer in fantasy, you're sort of just hoping that either Hader doesn't look his best when he returns, or that IL stay lasts a little longer.
Yeah, I mean, Hader's not a big innings guy. And he's never really, he has never thrown, I mean, at least the past few years, he's not one to throw 60, 70 innings. So, you know, it's still, even if Hader comes back, there's always, you know, potential for him to miss time. It's later on in the year, just with his history. I think Abreu, I think he's going probably a little bit too high right now, but I understand. Especially when you know you can get, you know, a couple saves early on in the year. There is value to that. And then Abreu is still a good reliever to roster either way. So I get that. I'm wondering, I mean, I drafted Hader at 135 in TGFBI, but that was kind of before we knew that he had that positive bullpen session. So I'm wondering, interesting to see how the next 2 weeks go for Hader. Where is he going to end up being drafted? I still think he's probably someone you want to take as a top 15 reliever. Just the upside there. And if he's only going to miss a week or two, then, you know, I wouldn't even really worry about that. We'll see what the next steps are. Cause it's only been one bullpen session that they were encouraged by. So there's multiple steps here for him to pass before he's ready to go.
Right.
But he's so far it's good news, I think, for Hader ultimately. We same with you said it, we knew he was very unlikely he'd be ready for opening day. But at least they were encouraged by his bullpen, I guess.
All right. In San Diego, Jason Adam has been ahead of schedule as he rehabs from a ruptured quad tendon. He said the plan as of this moment is to work one more bullpen sim game and then see if his first Cactus League game outing next, likely this weekend, see if that goes well. So Jason Adam could avoid opening the season on the IL, but it sounds like he's been ahead of schedule and will factor into this Padres bullpen in April at the very least.
Yeah, I think it's probably safe just to, you know, give him a week or two, let him, there's no need to rush him back, especially with that bullpen. They can survive a couple weeks without him. Still good news with Adam for holds leagues. He's always a rock in holds leagues. So, probably can feel safe drafting him where you would normally. And, you know, I'd say in a save holds league, he's at least a top 50 option, probably top 40. It's good news for him as well.
All right. That's Jason Adam. Cubs manager Craig Counsell revealed that Porter Hodge has been shut down from throwing due to a right flexor strain. Counsell noted that the expectation is that Hodge will begin the season on the injured list. Really unfortunate after Hodge's breakout 2024 campaign, where he had a sub-2 ERA, got a handful of saves, and looked like the closer of the future for the Cubs, but really struggled last year. ERA over 6 was up and down between the minor leagues, and now not able to stay healthy heading into 2026. That not only locks Palencia into the closer role, not that Hodge was going to be the one pushing him for it, but I think it means that Phil Maton and Hunter Harvey are going to get the bulk of the holds in Chicago. Hodge was really going to have to work his way back into high leverage situations, but yeah, I think Hunter Harvey is somebody who benefits a lot from that because he should get more opportunities in that seventh inning role.
Yeah, and that's a guy who so far Harvey's looks pretty good this spring. His velo's back up to where we've liked him at, 97 range. Again, Harvey just needs to stay healthy. That's always been his thing. But yeah, it's still hoping for something from Hodge this year. Some sort of, you know, middle relief setup role. Cause even last year, yeah, I don't think he's built to be a closer, but there's a really good reliever there, when healthy in Porter Hodge. So, hopefully we see him at some point this year. I know flexor strains can be tricky, obviously. So, but yeah, that's the Cubs will be able to survive without him.
The Guardians may not be able to survive without Hunter Gaddis, though, who's been one of their top setup men for the past couple of years, 35 holds last year. And Gaddis is currently dealing with right forearm tightness and is continuing his throwing progression at 90 to 120 feet. However, the team anticipates him throwing off a mound in the coming days, and that's pretty positive for the likelihood of him opening the season on the roster and avoiding an IL stint. So Hunter Gaddis trending towards being ready for opening day, but there is that slight concern that if he hits any setback over the next week, that maybe not.
Yeah, he should be all set, but I worry about the Cleveland and Guardian, the Gaddis and Cade Smith, and just the way that they're overworked there. It's going to come back to bite them. Hopefully for them, it's not at the same time. If they lose Gaddis and Smith at the same time, that's an issue, obviously. But yeah, like they need to rethink how often they use these guys. And it started with Class A before this. And even when Francona was there, it was the same issue. It's not just a Steven Vogt thing. But yeah, I think Cade Smith and Gaddis, they probably need to just pump the brakes on them, get them under 70 innings this year if they can. I know they lean on them. They need to. That's kind of their best unit, their bullpen. But yeah, those guys have been worked heavily the last 2 years, Gaddis and Smith.
Right. Back to the Texas bullpen after we talked about the addition of Jalen Beeks. We're going to discuss Chris Martin for a sec, whose career has seemed over multiple times recently. He said at the close of the 2024 campaign that he was 95% sure that 2025 season would be it for him. But this past season included 3 different injuries for Chris Martin, punctuated by a chilling diagnosis of thoracic outlet syndrome. And yet Martin is back with the Rangers on a 1-year deal. Do you remember ever hearing about this TOS injury for Chris Martin?
I don't remember. That's why I saw this. I don't know. I think it was Mining the News. I think Jeff Zimmerman put this out, and I'm like, I don't remember talking about this.
Me neither.
So why? Well, I don't know. I mean, why is he pitching? I mean, his stuff has been down this spring. I'm not like too surprised by it, but like now, yeah. That's their eighth inning guy, and he's going on 40 years old, coming off thoracic outlet syndrome. This whole Rangers bullpen is really, really questionable. I think when they talked about Martin being having a chance to close out games, I don't know if we can rely on him to be healthy throughout the whole year. So I don't think that's going to happen. So yeah, I guess again, we're talking about Robert Garcia stock going up, I guess by default, it's Robert Garcia's the only guy in that bullpen who he's probably the only guy that like is a legit MLB ready bullpen arm right now. Like on good teams, he's probably the only guy who's in a bullpen. So yeah, it's Garcia's job to lose here.
Right. Yeah. Pair of news coming out that I think really locks Garcia into that role. Not only having the left-handed support, but also the idea that Chris Martin is like on the verge of his arm falling off. So he's probably not going to be,
he was going to retire anyway. Yeah. It's right. Just a weird,
he's not really going to be competing for that closer role. So
yeah,
that's good news for people drafting Robert Garcia. And if you haven't gotten to a point in your draft where he's been drafted, I think you can have a little bit more confidence in him closing out the majority of games for the Rangers. But that will do it for our news and injuries section here. So then we can jump right into our American League bullpen preview. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We are going to preview the American League, asking a question about each and every bullpen for 2026. Let's start in the AL East and kick it off with the Baltimore Orioles, who have added Ryan Helsley this offseason. I think the biggest question here with Andrew Kittredge out is how things stack up before Helsley, because I don't think there's any question who's going to be closing out the majority of games for the Orioles with Helsley present. I think the leash is going to be very long for Helsley as well. But with Andrew Kittredge out and Felix Bautista out for the season, it's like, well, who's going to be setting up for Ryan Helsley? Right now, it looks like Keegan Aiken and Yennier Cano are the top likeliest candidates, but there's some under-the-radar arms that we've discussed in the past, like Dietrich Enns and Rico Garcia. So how are you seeing the 7th and 8th inning turning out for the Orioles in 2026?
Yeah, I mean, Aiken and Cano maybe by default being like the leftovers, the guys who have done this before in the 7th and 8th inning, they get the first crack. But I do like Enns and Garcia better. I don't think Cano's, like, I know last year was terrible, it was really unlucky, but I don't think that's, I think there's still good innings left for Yennier Cano. And Keegan Aiken, again, he can bounce back from last year as well. I think an interesting development also is Tyler Wells moving into the bullpen full time. I think he can really be a factor out of the bullpen for them. Does concern, they said that they moved him to the bullpen because of Kittredge's injury. So it kind of worries me that Kittredge might be out longer than we had thought. But yeah, I think this bullpen will be fine. Not flashy, not one of the best bullpens in baseball, but I mean, I believe in Helsley bouncing back this year. I don't think we're going to see St. Louis Cardinals 2024 Ryan Helsley, but I think we're going to get a pretty good closer, pretty solid effort from mm-hmm. him. And then, yeah, behind him, I think there's, yeah, Enns and Garcia can surprise, and Aiken and Cano probably should be better than last year. So it's solid bullpen. I think, Kittredge does that. Kittredge is a big X factor, though. If he's healthy, it does make everyone's role a little bit better suited for what they are mm-hmm. at this point.
Yeah. Looking at the minor leagues, I'm somewhat interested by right-hander Anthony Nunez, yeah. who was acquired from the Mets in the Cedric Mullins trade at the trade deadline last year. He was really excellent in the minors last year between high A, double A, and triple A pitching for both the Mets and the Orioles. 2.06 ERA and a 38% strikeout rate from Anthony Nunez. And he's on the 40-man roster, so there is a chance that at some point he is up in this Orioles bullpen. Do you have any sort of insight on Anthony Nunez?
He has crazy stuff. He's on the top of like stuff leaderboards this spring. he's more of a three pitch. He's not like a huge fastball with like a dominating breaking ball type reliever. He's got three pitches, I believe. He should factor in. And like you said, he's on the 40 man already. So probably one of the first call ups when a reliever goes down. But that's the type of upside that they need in that bullpen, where, you know, Cano doesn't really strike out a lot of guys, and Enrique Garcia hasn't at this point of his career either. So, that Nunez gives them some strikeout swing and miss ability that they definitely need.
All right. Well, that's the Orioles bullpen. So let's move forward and discuss the Red Sox bullpen, where they are led by Aroldis Chapman and Garrett Whitlock. I think the first question that comes to mind with the Red Sox is, how much stock do we put into Chapman's historic 2025 campaign in which he had a 1.17 ERA, 32 saves, and a 37% strikeout rate. Is that a level he can carry over? And if not, is he somebody that gets removed from the closer role?
Yeah, it's definitely possible. And I will admit that I don't love that his velo has been down like 2 miles per hour this spring, still is last as of his last outing. That being said, I do think he, and I never thought I would say this about him, is that I think he might be okay being a 96 to 97 mile per hour guy, just because of how much his slider and splitter have improved over the last 2 years, especially last year is the best we've seen those two pitches.
Yeah, the improvements in his command that I think were
the commands, obviously, very, like,
right. But that was like super noteworthy last year, where they talked about how Chapman was a guy who would just throw pitches wherever, he would just throw them. And now he realized that he can choose where he throws them. So I think that's pretty big. And right, if he does have diminished stuff in 2026, I feel like he should be able to still thrive. He is 38 though, so you never really know how much he's able to bounce back from, you know, pitching so much or having reduced stuff.
And it, even with the diminished velocity in the spring, it, his stuff still grades out really well. The fastball, sinker, splitter, and slider. So yeah, I think it's, you know, we're not going to, obviously we're not going to see the same year he had last year, no matter what, but and with a little bit diminished velocity, it's up, it's probably going to be a little bit worse than what we were hoping for. But I still think he's, unless there's like some major blowups, and I think the big issue is if his command reverts back to where it was before, you know, 2024, if he starts walking guys again, that's probably the one way to get him out of the closer, like he'll lose that closer role. But as long as he's not, you know, given free, you know, given walks out, and I think he'll keep that role. Is especially like after Garrett, like it's Chapman and Whitlock, and if you put Whitlock into the closer role, and that bullpen's just like, how do you get the ball to Whitlock now? It's a big it's a big question mark. So, and I like Zach Kelly and Justin Slayton if he can bounce back as well, but yeah, there's so many question marks. Even Kouliam being there now.
Exactly.
It's just the depth in that bullpen is not great.
Right. And that sort of sets up my next question, where it's very clear that the depth is not the strength of this Red Sox bullpen. However, I would argue that it is the strength of the staff as a whole. There's so many starters. So right. I think the question is, if necessary, which I expect it to be, which starter would you see moving into the bullpen and sort of having a significant role? Because there's plenty of guys there. There's young guys like Peyton Tolley and Connolly Early. There's guys coming back from injury like Cutter Crawford and Patrick Sandoval. And then there's, you know, unproven guys in the rotation like Johan Oviedo, and Brian Bello really hasn't solidified himself either. I think he's too much of an innings eater to expect him to move into the bullpen, but there's plenty of options. Who would you see moving into the bullpen and having like a significant role?
I think the options probably, I mean, Tolley would be a beast out of the bullpen. And I think that's kind of a last case or like a last resort, because they're still trying to develop him as a starter. Mm-hmm. Maybe in the second half, if there's no rotation spot for him, that's probably the best way to get him up.
You could see the like Garrett Crochet,
right?
Garrett Crochetification of Peyton Tolley.
Yeah. I also think if they get some other starters back, I mean, Oviedo would be interesting in a bullpen role. Right. I know that's been floated around a little bit, but yeah, they're going to give him a chance to start at least early on. And yeah, Cutter Crawford's probably the other one. And I mean, late in the season, Tanner Houck's coming back. He's probably a better bullpen option anyway. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess they'll have some reinforcements as the season progresses. But yeah, if you get Chapman or Whitlock end up on the IL, this bullpen's it's going to be really tough to get the ball to someone in the ninth inning at that point. So they got to hope Chapman and Whitlock stay healthy at least early on in the year.
All right, that's the Boston Red Sox. Let's move on to their rivals, the New York Yankees, where they are led by closer David Bednar, who was acquired from the Pirates at last year's trade deadline. And if you remember, the Yankees had a ton of acquisitions that also included the current Yankees, Camilo Doval and Jake Bird. But some of the other notable names are gone from that bullpen, namely Devin Williams and Luke Weaver. And there was another guy that was... Wasn't there another guy? No, that was it. Right?
Yeah, I think those are the two big names. Okay. Yeah.
Regardless, I think it's clear that this bullpen is diminished from the state that it was in entering the postseason last year. And I guess the question is, are the concerns that David Bednar, you know, is washed, are those gone? Because there was a time, especially when he was pitching for Pittsburgh, that we thought he might be done for. I mean, even as recently as last year, I know 2024 was a disaster for Bednar, but 2025, he opened the season, I think, on the injured list or in the minor leagues, one or the other. And he came back.
He got demoted after like his first two games.
And that's right.
Came back. Yeah.
Came back and he was strong enough to earn a spot on the All-Star team, I'm pretty sure, and then got traded to the Yankees and was pretty good there. I think we had sort of pinpointed what his struggles were. He wasn't able to throw his curveball where he wanted to, and his fastball was leaking over the plate. Are those concerns gone, though? Is this a guy that we can just trust to be the no-doubt closer for the Yankees for the whole season?
The curveball command got way better throughout the season, and that's why he was as good as he was. And that's great. I still worry about his stuff's just not, it's not as dominant as this is why I have a hard time putting him in that top tier with the other guys I have. He's just, there's the upside isn't there like it is with those other seven. And I think that there's going to have to be another readjustment period for him this year. He's throwing his curveball for strikes, which is great, but he's not exactly like throwing quality strikes with it. He's getting it over the plate, which is what was needed because hitters were taking it. But now, like, what if hitters start sitting on him, on his hanging curveball, similar to what happened with Raisel Iglesias last year, where every hitter was just sitting on his slider because he was just hanging a lot of sliders. He doesn't have the dominant stuff to just like go out there and like, here, throw your three best pitches. It's a little bit more of, you know, mixing up the pitch mix as the season progresses and just being able to locate a little bit better. So I'm not down totally on Bednar. But that being said, you know, I think Duvall's look pretty good this off season in the spring. His stuff looks good again. I don't know. It's probably, again, the Yankees probably will have a quicker hook with Bednar this year than they did with Devin Williams last year, I think. So we'll see. If Bednar gets off to another slow start, then they might go to Duvall, and Duvall could easily run away with that role. He's closed out games before for a long time. So,
right.
I mean, I'm okay with Bednar. I'm just don't love how early he's crept up into that top tier of closers now, where he's going in like the 50, 60 range. And I'm like, I don't quite see it. I get the opportunities great, but I'm probably going to pass.
The Yankees, surprisingly, I think, have underrated depth, where we have guys like Brent Hedrick and Angel Chavilla projected to start the season in the minor leagues. And those are two guys that I think have a lot of upside. I mean, just Chavilla leaving Colorado is huge. And Hedrick is somebody with the metrics that suggest that he's going to be a really good reliever if he gets the opportunity. On top of that, you have a rotation that is likely to get reinforcements from Gerrit Cole and Rodon as the season progresses, which should push some guys into the bullpen, namely, I think, guys like Luis Gil, maybe Ryan Weathers if things aren't going well, and just to keep him healthy. But I think Gil is somebody that's somewhat interesting if he's pitching out of the bullpen. He was so good in his rookie year as a starter, but since then, it's like he just cannot throw strikes. I think he'd be great out of the bullpen. I'm excited to see what Hedrick can do if he makes the roster. I think there's lots of guys that you can dream on in this Yankees bullpen, but there's also a lot of downside. There's lots of instability with a lot of these guys where it feels like we've seen all of them sort of blow up and become irrelevant. Like Fernando Cruz doesn't throw enough strikes. Doval has been like down to the minor leagues. Tim Hill could start throwing sub 80 or something. Jake Bird was not somebody that the Yankees trusted. Paul Blackburn had like the smallest sample of success out of the bullpen for the Yankees. So there's lots of uncertainty. There's a worst case
scenario. Yeah. Where like all those guys just like
where it's bad, but there's also like best case scenario where you have one of the best bullpens in the league.
Yeah, exactly. It's very, very, very volatile, especially at the top with Bednar, Duvall, and Cruz. That's like, and then behind them, all you have is Tim Hill and Jake Bird. You're really banking on that trio of volatility. But I mean, yeah, I think, you know, there's upside there, obviously. And yeah, once they get Cole and Rodon back, I mean, now all of a sudden, like, yeah, you said Heal, Weathers, maybe Will Warren, if he's not working out in the rotation as well. There's some starters that could be decent out of the bullpen as well, but yeah, it's not the, it's similar to the Red Sox where it's like, you have a couple guys at the top that are interesting, but then there's a gap of meh. But there's still volatility at the top, even with, you know, with who they have there. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting to see how everything works with Bednar and Duvall and Cruz from the seventh inning on. I can just see Yankee fans right now, just like, because Fernando Cruz is going to go out and walk three guys. It's going to happen early on in the season. He's, you know, and then Duvall is going to get hit around, and it's just, yeah, there's just a lot of, it's going to be a frustrating bullpen, I think, for Yankee fans.
I think I can agree with that. A bullpen that's likely to not be frustrating is the Rays. This is another bullpen that has a lot of depth, and that's usually the strength of the Rays pitching staff, is they're just going to get the most out of every pitcher, and you won't realize until the end of the season that a guy like Cole Sulcer is going to have a sub-2 ERA or whatever. Like, they're just going to get the most out of everybody. I think we've talked so much about like Griffin Jackson, Garrett Clevenger, and Brian Baker in the end, that I think it's more interesting to talk about, you know, who's going to be that next breakout arm for the Rays, because that's something they seem to always do. They'll find somebody that you've never heard of or somebody that you sort of forgot about and turn them into one of the best relievers. And then ultimately they'll trade them for somebody really good and just continue the cycle. I think some names that stand out for me, we were pretty hyped 2 years ago about Hunter Biggie. He's somebody who, all right, he throws really hard. I also like the idea of Joe Boyle moving from his position as a starter. Yeah, I mean, he just throws so hard. He can't throw strikes, but that's a guy that I could see, you know, really taking off in this Rays bullpen.
That would be fun. I mean, yeah, I would welcome that, especially since it doesn't seem like they're going to have a rotation spot for him. I know injuries happen and you need like eight or nine starters at this point. That's how the league is. But yeah, I mean, I think even as it, like we talked about the top three, and then, you know, Biggie's gonna, if he's healthy, he'll have a, no pun intended, a big role in that bullpen. But like Mason Engler, Kevin Kelly, and you said Cole Sulcer, like Cole Sulcer's got some like really good stuff. Kelly has had his moments as well, and Englert's like the guy no one really knows, but he's better than a lot of other teams' middle relievers. So, yeah, and then you got Yuseta coming back. Steven Wilson's kind of interesting. Manuel Rodriguez should be back, I think, in the second half, maybe. Or maybe not. He had surgery in August. Never mind. That's probably not going to happen. But anyway, the bullpen's deep. They'll have guys coming up from the minors too. There's some interesting, you know, they have a couple starters in the minors who could also be relievers, like Ian Seymour from the left side or Joe Rock. But there's other, they have some minor league, like kind of strictly relief types that are interesting as well. And I'm blanking on the names, but they'll be, yeah, this bullpen will be fine. Always ends up being okay in Tampa Bay, no matter what the situation is. So
they were more than okay last year.
Yeah.
Like based on results, they were the best bullpen in baseball last year. And they haven't really.
A lot of these guys had like bad year or like down years.
They're just that good. And they really only lost Mason Montgomery. And
it was not great.
But who was their close? Oh, and Pete Fairbanks.
Fairbanks had a good year. I mean, Clevenger was great last year, but Jack struggled once he got there.
Yeah.
Baker.
Same with Baker. Yeah.
Yeah. And you said it wasn't even his best self, too. His first half was terrible, but you said it was good in the second half, but the first half still brought down their averages a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, moving back to the Trop, they should all get a little bit of a boost. But, yeah, that top three and then top four, once you set us back, is really it's one of the better groups in baseball.
All right. Let's move on to the Blue Jays and wrap up the AL East. This team made it all the way to the World Series last year. And while their bullpen was very successful during the regular season, throughout the postseason, all I heard from the commentators was how not good the bullpen was, how like outside of Jeff Hoffman and Louis Varland, there was a lot of uncertainty. And I think a lot of that can be blamed on like a lack of familiarity with pitching in big situations like that. They had so many young guys that had never found their way into a postseason game, guys like Brendan Little and Braden Fisher, who had incredible regular seasons with strikeout rates north of 30% and really good ERAs, but they couldn't find that success during the season. Little, because he doesn't throw enough strikes. Fisher, because he doesn't really have a fastball that you can rely on. The team did add Tyler Rogers, but do you think that we start seeing those cracks that we saw during the postseason show during the regular season this year? Like, was last year just sort of fluky and lucky, or do we see the introduction of Rogers, who's like a real stabilizing force in a bullpen? Do you think that sort of allows everybody to be more comfortable, especially in a second year of this relief corps together?
Yeah, I think Rogers is, like you said, stabilizing force in a bullpen that is, you know, Varland throws hard, but a little inconsistent. Brendan Little strikes out everyone or walks everyone. You know, Fisher has his issues as much as he misses bats. So, yeah, having Rogers there is really a really different piece to what they have and outside, you know, the rest of that bullpen. So it's a nice, stabilizing force for them. Who's going to throw strikes. He's going to get, throw strikes, get ground balls, give you innings. I think, you know, Jimmy Garcia being healthy is a big difference maker for that bullpen as well. Because once you add Garcia, healthy Garcia with Rogers and Varland and Little from the left side, I mean, that's really, really deep. That's, you know, games over in the fifth inning type potential. And then they have, they have some depth in the minors. This is the team. Then this is why I had them in that first year. Is just the depth that they have. It really, like, they have 12 relievers like that can give
and
you legit
starters.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're
they've already got a 6-man rotation, and that's like with Shane Bieber starting the season on the IL and 6 starters on the 40-man roster in the minors.
They see what the Dodgers have done and what needs to be done to beat the Dodgers. It's just to have just incredible pitching depth.
Do you think that makes it so that we don't see sort of consistent roles? Because that's sort of what we've seen from the Dodgers, is that the way that they've been able to keep everyone healthy and keep everybody like ready once they get into the postseason is by having guys go down to the minors, like using up everybody's options, having guys spend time on the IL. Do you think that affects sort of the save plus hold situation here with Jeff Hoffman, or even Louis Varland's got an option? Braden Fisher is definitely going to spend some time
In
the minor leagues. I don't know. I could see this sort of being like a real ebb and flow bullpen where you're seeing a lot of different guys filter in and out.
Yeah, especially again, like if you add Jimmy Garcia, then like who gets that second setup role between Varland, Garcia, and Rogers? I'm sure Rogers is locked into the seventh or eighth inning spot. But then one of Varland and Garcia kind of gets worked out. Brendan Little still should be fine as just because he's their top lefty. Guys like Fisher, who like there's a lot of upside with Fisher. He, again, misses a ton of bats, but I don't think he's going to have a huge role as far as holds go. And like you said, he's probably going to be in AAA at some point, if not multiple points throughout the year. Especially when Garcia comes back, which is supposed to be in April. He's not too far behind. I mean, Fisher's the guy to go, right? Because that's, I mean, the Tommy Nance is out of options, so he probably stays. And I don't think they're going to move Varland. I think it'll be Fisher goes down once Garcia is healthy. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of, you know, there's going to be some talent there in AAA and guys moving around. But yeah, I think the two guys that are safe are Hoffman and Rogers, and then Varland, Little, and Garcia, I think as long as they're on the roster, should have, they might not be holds leaders, but they'll be in the mix in the seventh, sixth innings of games, if not the eighth. So I still like those guys, Varland, Garcia, and Little, but yeah, it's going to be probably a little bit inconsistent as far as holds go.
Yeah. Yeah. And even saves, you never know. I mean, Hoffman really struggled last year at some points, but we're really banking on the underlying metrics pointing to what we can expect from Hoffman, because he's really unlucky in the home run department.
Yeah. He said he's going to throw his breaking ball more this year. Okay. Hopefully that works. I mean, his fastball got destroyed. So yeah, that's probably the first place to start. So that makes sense.
All right. Well, that's the American League East. Next, we'll jump into the American League Central here on our bullpen preview. But first, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jay Crumpler here with Rick Graham discussing relievers. We are doing our American League bullpen preview right now. We just wrapped up the AL East and we're entering the AL Central. We'll start with the Chicago White Sox, who have added to their bullpen with a few pretty high upside arms in the names of Sir Anthony Dominguez, Sean Newcomb, and Jordan Hicks. That adds to a young core that was starting to emerge last year, namely Jordan Leisure, who was primed to be the closer heading into 2026, but it looks like Dominguez is going to take that role, as well as Grant Taylor, who emerged as sort of that third guy in line of like the Sale Crochet trilogy of like guys with undeniable talent. It's just about keeping them on the field, and the White Sox have felt comfortable starting guys in the bullpen and then moving them into the rotation. Taylor's going to stick in the bullpen here, but there is so much upside here. I guess the question is, do you think somebody emerges as strong enough to just force the White Sox hands in terms of like replacing Dominguez as the closer? Can Taylor be good enough, or Leisure be good enough, or even Sean Newcomb show enough that they force the White Sox to take Sir Anthony out of the role?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think they're still trying Newcomb out as a starter, possibly Mike Vassell still. But there's a little bit of a, yeah, there's a, you know, I mean, I guess Eric Fetty is going to get the fifth starter role, so that moves Newcomb into the bullpen. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, Grant Taylor should be, I don't know. I kind of wish that they would just consider him a reliever, because I think that's, I mean, probably his best role. I know they don't want to give up on him being a starter, but in spring so far, and I know his last outing, he went more than one inning, but he's been kind of working just one inning outings, which is surprising considering that they wanted him to be more of a multi-inning reliever. But maybe they're just slow playing it. But either way, I think Taylor's stuff is just, it's so crazy. It's so much better than Leisure. It's better than Sir Anthony Dominguez. I don't know. It's not Mason Miller-esque, but it's like, you know, that's like the comp I'll give, just because it's, you know, this guy who we don't know if he's a starter or reliever yet. But like, just stuff wise, he's the best option in that bullpen. So I do think, yeah, if Sir Anthony Dominguez struggles early on, and if Leisure's not, I mean, we've only really seen one good half of a season from Leisure, so I'm not like totally sold on him yet. So if Dominguez and Leisure aren't pitching well in the first half, and like Taylor's just striking everyone out, I don't know. Like, at what point did the White Sox just go, you know what, this is probably our closer of the future here, so let's just, you know, let's make this happen. Because that's, it's really the only guy. I mean, I'm not totally out on Sir Anthony Dominguez or Leisure necessarily, but like Taylor's the guy I have interest in this bullpen more than anyone else. And it's not that close. So I'm just hoping that, yeah, he can settle in. And even if, and I've seen him, he's going early in drafts for a reason. And I totally get it. 'Cause even if he's not closing out games, he's going to potentially give you 90 to 100 innings, and like that's a ton of strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a handful of wins, handful of saves as well. And hopefully he boosts your ratios as well, because he shouldn't be getting hit around like he did last year. Last year was really a ton of bad luck, batted ball luck from him. So don't look at his ratios from last year. Just look at the swing and miss stuff. It's off the charts.
A lot of strikeouts for Grant Taylor, and definitely the guy to watch here. But there's certainly an outcome where you have everybody having their best season again, and Sean Newcomb repeats what he did last year. Jordan Hicks figures out what he's trying to do on really the mound. Good
bullpen. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Mike Vassell was really good last year, 101 innings out of the bullpen too. And Jordan Leisure, like you said, figured it out in the second half last year. So there's certainly a situation where the White Sox give you some confidence in their bullpen. I don't think the rest of the roster is sort of primed for this team to like make a surprise run at the postseason, but this would give them something to build off of heading into 2027. So some exciting names in that White Sox bullpen, most notably Grant Taylor. Let's go over to the Cleveland Guardians next. This is a bullpen that's always successful, somewhat quietly so, but also they just rely so heavily on a few arms. Last year, we saw Cade Smith and Hunter Gaddis be those guys. Clase has been for a while the guy that they've relied on, but it looks like his pitching career might be over. Not that he's going to come back as a hitter, but I think he's just done in baseball. He's probably going to be behind bars or something like that, but not great for the Guardians. However, they do have Cade Smith, who's like, if you want to say like best case scenario for your closer to go to jail and have some guy step right into that role, Cade Smith's like the top guy you would pick. I mean, for the past couple of years, we talked endlessly about, wow, how good he is and what he could do as a closer from the day that he started pitching in the major. So now we'll see a full season of Cade Smith as the closer. The question is, can he handle the workload? We've seen him do it for the last 2 years, but that's got to start weighing on him. Do you have concerns about Cade Smith handling a third season of a Cleveland Guardians reliever's workload?
Yeah, we talked about with Gaddis as well. That's those two guys have been heavily worked the last 2 years. And again, this year, that's probably the hope. It's a really deep bullpen. It's a really good bullpen. They probably don't need to. They could probably, give those guys a little bit more time off in between outings. but yeah, that's my only real concern with Cade Smith or Gaddis, I guess, is just the workload catching up to them. Just fatigue and stuff diminishing, and eventually health problems and injury issues. But I'm not going to fade Cade Smith for that purpose. If he's in that top tier closers. If you like the other six better, I understand if he's your seventh guy. But I think this bullpen is. I mean, the guys like Connor Brogdon and Colin Holderman this spring look really good as well. It's just like the Guardians pitching lab or whatever it is, whatever you want to call it. They churn out relievers. One of those teams, we talk about like the Brewers or the Rays. It's just these certain teams just know where to find and how to churn out really good relievers. So, Sean Armstrong's a nice addition to them for them as well. And Sabrowski's awesome from the left side. Really, really fun bullpen. But like we talked about at the beginning with Gaddis, if they do lose Smith and Gaddis at the same time, then that's an issue. If they only lose one, I think they'll be okay. But they can't lose both. Those two guys are too important.
Right. It really falls apart after those two guys. And yeah. I guess they're banking on somebody like Sean Armstrong, who has shown stability and stamina over the past couple of years, the ability to pitch in a lot of games. I guess they're going to be relying on him to sort of be that glue guy in that bullpen. Yeah. Let's move over to the Detroit Tigers, who added Kenley Jansen to the roster this offseason. They also returned Kyle Finnegan after acquiring him at last year's trade deadline. The question here is, how do you think they're going to use this bullpen? I think it's makes sense for Kenley Jansen to be the closer with Vest and Finnegan setting up, but it's sort of confusing right now, given Finnegan was a closer for the Nationals for a while and Vest was the closer before that. And there was some splitting of the role last year, but with Jansen in there, it's like you don't really want him outside of the ninth inning. So, Rick, how do you project the Tigers bullpen being utilized in 2026?
Yeah, I think I know there's been some talk about them still going somewhat of a committee approach, but it's I think it's going to be Jansen's job to lose first and foremost. I think more often than not, Jansen's going to be in the ninth outside of some weird matchup situations, which I can't even think of off the top of my head because Finnegan and Vest are also right-handed. And I think Finnegan
is like a guy who relies on a splitter though. So
this doesn't say the splitter. So he's more, I guess if you have like a left-handed, I want to say his splits weren't great against lefties though, but I don't know. I'd have to look into that. But either way, Jansen with his cutter running that into lefties is always tough as well. So, I think for now, I think we've seen AJ Hinch never really have a bullpen where he's had a really number one lockdown closer like he has now with Jansen. So I think given the personnel, I think we'll see more of a steady, you know, Jansen in the ninth, Finnegan in the eighth, Vest before that type scenario with Tyler Holton being the lefty. And that's a really good four. That's a really good group of four there. But if they lose one of them, it does get a little bit more dicey with, you know, Hanafy and Herder are fine. They're solid middle relief options, but there's no swing and miss upside with those guys. So, I like how things stack up for the Tigers right now with the trio of Jansen, Finnegan, and Vest, and throw Holton in there if you want to. If Jansen misses some time, then it does shorten things there. But I still think Finnegan's the top handcuff to Jansen if Jansen were to miss time.
I've been in the same boat as well in that opinion. The strikeouts have always been something that this Tigers bullpen recently have been lacking.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I could see something like, you know, if Troy Melton returns from injury and that rotation is still full, which it looks like it's going to be right now. That's a guy who I think would be really interesting out of the bullpen, but I don't want to bank on it given that he's already going to start the year on the injured list, but Troy Melton could be interesting, at least like at the very least adding that, that strikeout arm that the Tigers bullpen sorely lacks. Another bullpen that lacks strikeouts has been the Royals bullpen. They have gotten by with their ballpark and their defense and just pitching it to contact, and it worked the last 2 years, but with them changing the dimensions of the ballpark, pulling the fences in, likely increasing the home run rates, I think both of us are very concerned with how mostly Carlos Estevez is going to pitch in 2026, because this is a guy that already, even without the changes to the ballpark, was projected to take a big step back in 2026 after a 42 save season last year. So I guess how long does Estevez hold on to the role and who replaces him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he can hang on to the role for the whole year. The big question is who replaces him, because no one's really sticking out this spring. Ursig's stuff is still down. It's down more from last year. It's like, I was hoping he would get back to where he was in 2024, but it's gone the other way. Same with Nick Mears. Like, it's not, again, like 2024, like Rocky to Brewer, first year in Milwaukee, Nick Mears was awesome, and his stuff has just gone the wrong way. And Alex Lang has looked not excited about Alex Lang. I guess Matt Strom, you know, probably, I know he's left-handed, but like there's a veteran quality there, and they do have Daniel Lynch as well as Bailey Falter in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. So I'm starting to lean more Strom than Ursig until I see something from Ursig. The hot name there is Luinder Avila, I get it. He should be in the bullpen. He probably should be a reliever, but it sounds like they still have interest in potentially giving him, you know, a shot to start in AAA and maybe move into the rotation at some point. But if he does, if Avila is a full-time reliever, that's definitely interesting. He had a little cup of coffee last year and was good. out of the bullpen for them. But yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, Steven Cruz has kind of always intrigued me because his stuff is crazy, but he's got an issue of throwing strikes. So yeah, it's, I don't know. The bullpen is not, there's really nothing exciting about this bullpen. It can be fine. It used to be fine because I think the ballpark factors and
right.
like, really a lot of guys, defense. Yeah, defense. And like these guys like give up a lot of contact and you have good defense and, you know, the park's huge, but now the park, it's not huge anymore. And I don't know. We'll see how those home runs. I mean, I'm Carlos Estevez. We'll see. I don't think the Dominican, they didn't trust him last night. I don't know if they'll trust him in the semifinals or the quarterfinals either. I don't know how they can when he's throwing 90, just throwing meatballs right now. And again, I thought like putting on that Dominican jersey would help him, like, you know,
hype him up,
get amped up. And yeah, it has not. So
I mean, that's like, for me, Estevez is one of the clearest like bust candidates I've ever seen. Just we were already off of him just considering the underlying metrics, and now with the ballpark change, I just have very little faith in that. But it's, as you went through there, it's not really a clear option to replace him. So I think I'm putting my eggs in the Urseg and Strom baskets, but I definitely don't want to be heavily invested into this bullpen, but this is one where you could come out with some very positive fantasy results if you stay invested and stay focused, which if you're looking to stay tapped into this bullpen all year long, definitely continue to listen to the In the Pen podcast, because this is definitely one we'll be talking about. To wrap up the AL Central, we have the Minnesota Twins. They entered the offseason. They entered the offseason with just an awful collection of arms, and it just did not seem very inspiring. They added Taylor Rogers. They got Anthony Bonda after he was DFA'd by the Twins, and they added Andrew Chafin on a minor league deal. None of those guys are really huge difference makers. They are all lefties, so I think that does allow Rogers to open the season as the closer, because there's enough left-handed support, especially with Cody Funderburk there. But Rogers is not somebody that has really a high ceiling. The only ceiling we're talking about is in the saves department, where if he maintains that closer role through the first half, you're getting a pretty good handful of saves from Taylor Rogers. So I guess the first question is, what's your faith in Taylor Rogers heading into the season? Do you think he can hold on to the role until the trade deadline, where he's inevitably going to be traded? And then after that, who steps up? Who's going to be the closer? Because we saw last year, they just sold off the whole bullpen and there was just nobody left standing. It was like Cole Sands and Justin Topa, and neither of those guys were really inspiring. So how long does Rogers, like, go ahead.
These projections are pretty hilarious for this Twins bullpen on Fangraphs.
They're bad.
No one with a war over 0.8, no one with two guys with an ERA under 4, no one with a strikeout rate over. And I don't know how Taylor Rogers ends up with the highest K per nine projection on this list. That's Andrew Chafin, actually.
Strike guys out.
I know. It's a very, again, there's a lot of bad bullpens this year. I feel like more, I don't know why is, like, there's just like between the Twins, the Nationals, the Diamondbacks.
We talked about the depth on all the other rosters. That probably has something to do with everybody's just hoarding the relievers.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think the Twins are hoping that Taylor Rogers can give them 3 good months in that role, and then they can sell him. I like Cole Sands a little bit, but I don't know what his he needs to like figure out 3 or 4 good pitches, because he's throwing like 5 or 6 right now. And I don't know. I just, if you're going to be in the bullpen, like let's hone in on like 3 or 4 like above average pitches here. Eric Orsi's the wild card there. I would love to see him get a chance. As far as stuff goes, that's probably the best option here, not from the left side at least. All those lefties though, that none of them are closers. They're all like solid left-handed bullpen guys, but they shouldn't be closing at this point. And neither should Justin Topa, and probably not Cole Sands either. So, yeah, I like Orsi as a really, really deep, you know, possible guy to finish the year as the closer there, but it's yeah, I would just try to avoid as much as possible. I mean, there's part of me, because Taylor Rogers just having that role and really not probably having any competition there, is like, okay, there's cheap saves, but there's also a chance he just gets, you know, shelled his first couple outings and loses the role to Funderburk or Bander or whatever. I would probably just try to avoid, unless you're an AL only, and then maybe Rogers for cheap, but that's it.
All right. Yeah. Not too inspiring here in the Twins bullpen. I've read that like Connor Prelip, one of their top starting pitching prospects, maybe somebody that could pitch out of the bullpen because of his inability to stay healthy. He also doesn't throw a lot of strikes, but he's a southpaw as well, and I doubt they'll thrust him right into the closer role, but I guess he's another name good to watch. Off.
Yeah, I mean, stuff-wise, that's, if you're going to put a lefty in the closer role, that's like the type of guy you probably want. So
yeah big slide.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, that wraps up the AL Central. So let's close things out with the AL West, starting with the Sacramento Athletics. They have a very uncertain late innings group. And the real question here is going to be, who's going to be the closer? They added Mark Leiner Jr. They added Scott Barlow. They're returning Justin Sterner and Hogan Harris, who factored into the late innings last year. But none of these guys stand out as the guy who's going to be the closer. Who are you putting your money on to end the season with the most saves for the A's?
Oh, man. I was originally on Team Sterner for a while. And I still like Justin Sterner. But, you know, I think it's just, I don't know if anyone's going to get more than 12 or 15 saves here. I think that's just going to be how it is. I mean, I really want to say Elvis Alvarado. He was electric in this World Baseball Classic for the Dominican. Came in and bailed out Abner Uribe last night. Would have been easier if he didn't throw a ball into center field on a routine double play ball. But his stuff is great. I mean, out of this bullpen, there's no one that comes close to his stuff. That said, he's probably not going to open the year in the closer role. I mean, Hogan Harris has looked a lot better this spring, and I thought Hogan Harris was just kind of some, you know, mid-tier lefty, but I think there's more there. I think he can be if he's not, but this is the thing, he's the only lefty in that bullpen right now.
Right.
So that pushes me off him being the closer. And I mean, I'm the veterans like Leiter and Barlow, and I guess we'll throw Michael Kelly and Ferguson in there. I just, those guys don't intrigue me too much. So I guess for me, it's Sterner to start the season and Alvarado to end the season are kind of interesting. And Hogan Harris as some sort of lefty who probably is going to be valuable in holds leagues this year. At the very least, but again, maybe if they're saving him for left-handed pockets, he could still get some saves in the ninth inning, depending on matchups and whatnot. So, it's I don't know. We'll see. It's a very interesting mix of relievers there between the veterans and the younger guys.
It's sort of just a lot of the same, and you see that in the rotation too, where there's just so much of just. Is this guy like big league caliber? They've just struggled so much drafting starters and trading for starters. Yeah, you're going to have so many starters factor in this bullpen as well.
Yeah,
you got hard throwing guys like
Jack Perkins,
Luis Morales, Jack Perkins, Luis Medina, guys that could be good in the bullpen, but you never know if they're even going to get the opportunity. But there's so many guys that I don't know. There's also like Eduardo Nunez, who is sort of a high upside reliever as well. So it's just a whole lot of like, shrug. I don't know. Like, is it even worth it paying attention here? Obviously, we're going to be locked into it, but it's probably a situation I stay away from in fantasy just because there's so much uncertainty. There's just nobody that really stands out. And the guys that do, like Alvarado, are probably going to be passed over for guys with less arbitration years, is really the factor.
Unfortunately, yeah, it's probably true. But I mean, the two guys with the less service time, the least amount of service time, are the highest upside arms in that bullpen, right. Sterner and Alvarado. Right. So hopefully they get a chance. Hopefully they get a fair chance.
Fingers crossed. Let's move over to the Houston Astros, where we talked about at the top of the podcast, Hader is going to start the season on the injured list. Abreu should open the season as the closer. He's going to be one of the top relievers in baseball. There's plenty of southpaws in this bullpen. That's really the strength of the Astros relief corps. Talking about Brian King, Stephen Oker, Bennett Sousa to go along with Josh Hader. The real question, like what righty reliever is going to support Brian Abreu if he's the closer? I mean, right now they're showing Aniel De Los Santos as the top righty reliever. And after that, it's Rodri Munoz and his 8.18 ERA and Kaiwei Tang, who the Giants didn't even want with their terrible relief corps. So I don't know. Where are you seeing, how are you seeing the right-handed side of the Astros bullpen figuring itself out in 2026?
Yeah, I think this is another team that probably pulls from their relief or their starting depth at some point to help out the righties in that bullpen. Maybe Bluba or, I mean, yeah, Miguel Ulloa is, he's on the 40 man now. That's an interesting potential reliever. Arrigetti, I mean, but he's probably going to be better as a starter. But if they moved, I mean, yeah, they'll probably find someone from the rotation to move into the bullpen. Because, yeah, just having De Los Santos and Abreu as your only righties to really rely on is, that's not great. De Los Santos is okay as like a middle long relief guy. And Munoz, they got in, you know, a rule five for a guy who's got 90 career innings. They got him in the rule five draft. So, probably says something about where he is at his career. I mean, the lefties are great and Abreu's great. It's just, you're right. It's finding that secondary righty to kind of complement the rest of that bullpen.
Right. And I'm not sure if they have it, but I think you're prescient to suggest that they're going to pull from that starting rotation, which I think is going to be a theme we see throughout the season, just because of how many bullpens we've already discussed that have a lot of starting rotation depth and don't have the best bullpens and could use some help there. So it usually sorts itself out throughout the season. Mm-hmm. The Angels are a team that always seem to be struggling to find enough pitchers because of the amount of injuries and struggles that they have on the mound. Right now they have a ton of high upside, and very risky arms in that bullpen. So there's a lot of potential here. There's also probably a much higher likelihood that it is a disaster, like right from the get-go. But with names like Robert Stevenson, Kirby Yates, Jordan Romano, you got some high upside righties that could really propel this bullpen. I don't know. It's like the question is like, do you have any faith in this bullpen figuring itself out? I mean, it seems like they've got enough guys that they could somehow have things go their way. But given how the Angels have performed in the past, I'm unlikely to have that kind of confidence.
Right. And it's like, if this was any other team, like that could develop pitching, I would be like, all right, this could be interesting and fun, mm-hmm. but it's the Angels. So I feel just like bad about it. I just feel like it's not going to end well for them. Right. The Angels aren't going to be the team that turns around Jordan Romano's career, right? I don't think so. Kirby Yates, like we already talked about him, he might be cooked. I don't know. I don't know yet. His spring has been very lackluster. Stuff doesn't look great. I mean, honestly, like, and I think again, we talk about the lefty situations and bullpens and them bringing in Brent Suter in February to give them a second lefty. Because Drew Pomeranz going to be... I would not be surprised if Pomeranz leads this team in saves just because of like availability and stability reasons. Like just being there and being healthy, and which is weird to say about Drew Pomeranz. But I mean, last year he was very sturdy for the Cubs. I wonder if Pomeranz just winds up being the steady force or steady option back there. I would love to see Robert Stevenson be healthy. Then projection, if he gets 60 innings like these projections say, I would be thrilled, and I think we would get good results from him. But man, it's just this bullpen is it's like, I guess if you want to take a really late flyer, it's okay. But I'm like, the way Yates is going inside the top 300, some places or around pick 300, I'm out on that. I'm going to wait till after 400 to take a shot at one of these guys.
Yeah. I think if anything, this is going to be a fun bullpen to sort of watch from afar. We'll observe them from a distance, because there's enough names here that you can get excited, but you don't want to get invested. I'm excited to see Ben Joyce return, see how he looks after the torn labrum. We should get some more of Jose Fermin, and plenty of names here. Ryan Zephyrjohn after his somewhat impressive season last year. So a lot of names to watch. I think the Angels bullpen is going to be, it's almost like like a car crash or something. It's going to be like bad, but you can't take your eyes off of it.
Yeah.
All right. Next, we've got the Mariners bullpen, which has historically been one of the best in baseball. Last year, it was incredible, and it took them all the way to the American League Championship Series. They've got like all the same guys as last year, and then they added Jose Ferrer, which is a huge addition to this bullpen. I think very underratedly so. I think people that aren't really as tapped into, deeper league relievers don't really know how good Ferrer is and how unlucky he was last year. One of the most unlucky relievers in baseball. And I think we both have faith that with this new pitching development staff in Seattle, after leaving the Nationals, he should tap into the strikeout potential that he's displayed. I guess we've got faith in Andrés Muñoz. Do you think this is going to be one of the best bullpens in baseball again, or do you think we see some sort of step back?
No, I mean, they should be the best bullpen in baseball. I think, Brash being another year removed from Tommy John, he finally made a spring outing, I think, yesterday, and his fastball is up a little bit, which is great to see, especially in his first spring outing. Seeing him back at 97 miles per hour consistently is awesome. So I think Brash can be even better this year. I think Jose Ferrer will be better in Seattle than he was in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Bizardo took a huge step forward towards the end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Gabe Spire, I think everything that Spire did last year is repeatable. I think he's one of the best left-handed relievers in the game. So this bullpen should be fine. And so far, Andrés Muñoz has looked great. He's looked fine in the spring. His velocity is where it should be. It's not down any further than it was last year. So I'm feeling better about Muñoz health wise. So yeah, I mean, this bullpen, like, their top six is probably the best, one through six as far as a bullpen goes in baseball. And they have AAA depth as well. They have loads of guys on the 40 man in AAA that are upside as well.
Yeah, this is sort of like that one bullpen where you're not really concerned about it. It's so well constructed that everybody's got clear roles. Everybody has had success in the past, and pitching in that ballpark with the pitching development staff that the Mariners have, you just have so much faith in it. And it's just, okay, yeah, Andrés Muñoz is going to be dope. Draft him. Matt Brash and Ferrer are going to be the top two setup men. And then the rest of that bullpen is just going to provide like really important and strong depth. So there's really not many questions about the Mariners bullpen. It's just, what heights can they achieve?
And from a hold standpoint, it's like between like Spire and Ferrer, like, are they both able to get a bunch of holds, or like, that's really the questions, like, in deeper holds leagues. That's like, the front end
spread
great.
Them out some more.
Yeah, but it's kind of like the Dodgers, where between Vezia, Scott, and Jack Dreyer, like, which one of those lefties, gets the most holds? Is there room for that secondary lefty to get 20 holds? Which typically there is, especially on good teams. So I'm not too worried about it for holds leagues with Spire and Ferrer. There's plenty of room for both of them to get holds.
All right. And lastly, we've got the Rangers bullpen. They are projected to have Robert Garcia leading the group, and then the rest of it is sort of a bit of a shrug. We talked about Chris Martin like nearing the end of his career. Cole Wynn is somebody who is not going to have a 1.51 ERA again. And then from there, it's like, who can we even expect to be in the bullpen? Not even like, who can we expect to have success? Who's even going to be pitching in it? I'd love to see some of their starting pitching prospects get an opportunity in the bullpen. I think we've talked a lot about Emiliano Teodo for a few years. I think they're probably shifting him straight to the bullpen now. Somebody like Mark Church has shown potential in the past. They got Michelle Otañez from the A's last year. They also have Alexis Diaz waiting in the wings. And I don't know, maybe Kumar Rocker gets a chance in that bullpen, but it really feels like they're sort of winging it. Like they're just, okay, we got some guys. Not really sure who's it going to be, but outside of Robert Garcia and Chris Martin, it's just, how do you see this shaking out?
Yeah. Rocker is an interesting one. That's when I did a bullpen panel last week with Greg Jewett and Doug Dennis for First Pitch Florida Baseball HQ. And yeah, Greg brought up Rocker as a name there. And it makes sense. He's not working out as a starter. I don't know. There's the whole thing with Rocker, and his fastball is just not great despite the velocity. But maybe a little uptick in velocity will, you know, outweigh the bad shape on the fastball. So maybe a bullpen role. I kind of compared him. Maybe it's like a Michael Kopech type transition where that's the best place for him. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like Robert Garcia. He's not a closer to me. He's a solid left-handed reliever, but in this situation, he's clearly the only guy I would trust. Especially with the thing about Chris Martin not being exactly healthy. And I mean, Josh Sports is not, like I saw, he's not looked good this spring. I don't think he makes the roster. Cole Wynn's projections are terrible, which, as they should be. He was very lucky last year. Mm-hmm. And then it's Carter Baumler, Jalen Beeks, and Tyler Alexander.
It's not good.
It's just like,
want them to sort of introduce that next wave of relievers, because it does feel like they have some guys waiting in the wings that are a bit exciting, but are they going to give those guys the opportunity?
They got to be healthy first. I think if those guys get healthy and they're throwing strikes in AAA, we'll see them quickly. There is, I guess, some hope in AAA with Teodo, Church, and even Luis Carvalho's interesting, and Otañez. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an interesting bullpen. Again, this is another one of those bullpens that we'll be watching. Similar to the A's, it's not, you know, we'll be watching, especially even if Garcia is the closer, just whatever happens behind him, I have no idea at this point. So we're seeing who takes over that seventh, eighth inning role. Will be interesting to watch.
Right. Yeah. Well, that is the American League. We are sort of prepped for the regular season now with the American League. And next week will be our last off-season podcast. We will preview the National League with the same sort of format of asking questions about each National League bullpen. And that will sort of set us up to begin the 2026 season. It's really starting to arrive very quickly. So drafts are starting to wrap up. I'm sure I'm on the clock somewhere right now with all the slow drafts going on. We've got our home league draft next Friday, so better be prepared for that, Rick. Rick has not been winning in that prepared league. No,
I'm gonna have a different approach this year. You'll see.
All right. I like that you're thinking about it. All right, but that will cover the American League bullpens. So Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your socials and let everybody know what you're working on as we wrap up the offseason.
Yeah, you can find me on social media at I am Rick Graham. I am, as of the day this podcast comes out, I'm hoping to have my save plus hold update out there, as well as closer update. And then next week there'll be one more update. And then it's the season. Regular season's here, so yeah, two more updates, and we're going.
All right, yeah, it's really speeding up. It's like the train is leaving the station right now. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. I also do some playing time analysis over at Baseball HQ. I am pushing very hard to have my top 100 starting pitching article out next weekend. I am on the clock now in TGFBI. It just happened. Nice. But yeah, so look forward for that top 100 starting pitching article. I like, you know, the point in this, in the offseason that it's coming out, I don't think anybody's using that for like their analysis for their drafts and stuff, but you know, I didn't expect anybody to use it anyway, but looking to have a lot of work to do on starting pitchers throughout this season. And hopefully we get the First Pitch podcast up and running very shortly as well. So stay tuned for all of that. You can find all of our work over at pitcherlist.com. Make sure to sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro so you can get access to all the incredible tools we have, especially for draft season. But there's so much more that you can get access to during the season. And Kyle and the rest of the team are always cooking up brand new stuff, brand new stats, brand new tools that can help you throughout the season. So definitely sign up for those things. You also get access to the Discord so you can privately message me and Rick and ask us all the, you know, questions you want about our personal lives, because I know that's what everybody's interested in when they listen to this podcast. But that will do it for this episode number 151 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.